I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Now, this is a special day. On this day of days, I am joined by the youthful Father Garrett Burns.
Hey, hey.
And the aging Father Drew Hoffman.
That's not wrong.
That's not wrong.
It's how my body feels sometimes.
I was going to say, how are you feeling today? Do you need any Asper cream or anything like that?
What the heck? What's Asper cream?
Actually, I don't really. It's some medicinal thing old people use when their joints hurt.
I do just get sore, man. I get so sore. I'd go to the Y a decent amount, maybe 5 days a week, and I'm just hurting.
You may not realize this because we're recording these early, yeah. But the day that this comes out, if I'm correct, is your birthday, February 6th.
Oh, yeah.
So literally, on the day this drops, you are...
32.
It is your birthday.
32.
The magic year. It is...
32 is the magic year?
Yeah, that was Magic Johnson's number.
It's the magic year, it's as magical. We all in NBA fanhood
year,
say.
You got the magic year and you got the Christ year.
Ah, so you are, when this comes out, you are a day older, so...
32. My gosh. Oh,
where has the time gone?
Know, man.
I still had hair when I was 32, so just so you be warned.
That's not funny.
Your future. Say,
that's no way that's true.
No way that's true. I will say at 32, I was still buying hair product. It was thin. It was thin, but I was still convincing myself there was hair there.
Oh my gosh. I've told the story about the bat. Never mind. I've told the story about the bat on here.
Oh, yeah, your birthday bat?
The best birthday gift I've ever received. Come see it in my office sometime.
Well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
So in your honor, today we are celebrating in the studio of St. Andrew Dunlach.
Oh, I love him.
So we've done Andrew the Apostles. Yeah. We need another Andrew.
Which were you named after?
Dunlach. I think my parents were very... That's so funny.
Those that don't know, he was a diocesan priest who was martyred in Vietnam in the 1800s. I was reading up on him. I think my favorite little story I read about him that I'm like, I could see this happening with you, Drew.
Okay.
So there's persecution going on in Vietnam. The government was cracking down. And
Drew hasn't fled yet, is what you're saying.
Already there's some discrepancies here. Yeah.
So he gets arrested by the government. And his parishioners ransom him from the government. So I could see your parishioners doing, like, you get picked up and they're like, we got to get Father Drew out of jail. And they raise the money and they ransom him.
He's not going to make it in there. It's like
he's 32 now.
They were ransoming. They tried to ransom Ignatius of Antioch. Uh-huh. And he's like, no, I need to stay in here because if I die in here, that will clinch people's belief in the monoepiscopacy and faith and things like that. He's like, I need to die in here. Don't ransom me. I'd be like, shut up and take their money. Just take the money.
Why is this taking so long?
Get me out of here. Oh my gosh. What does Andrew mean in Greek?
Someone said that one time. I don't,
manly. I mean, let's go. Mm. Okay, birthday. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Happy birthday. Wait,
this is our gift to you.
That's all I need.
Yeah, that's all you're getting, let me tell you. Well, last season, we invited listeners who had never met us or didn't know us to send us pictures of how they thought we might look. And so we had one listener, Luke from South Carolina, sent me some pictures. Now, he's not an artist, so he didn't draw them. So he just went looking for pictures on the web that he thought resembled us. So you guys have not seen them. I've seen them. And so I don't know how this will work exactly on podcast. I thought we could post them on the website, but since they're actual of real people without those real people's permission, we probably shouldn't just be pasting their name up there. So I'm going to read you the description that Luke sent me and then share the pictures with you. So we'll start with me. He said, you know, at first I imagined you look like this happy priest holding a baby in a seminary. So here's the picture of it.
We'll kind of describe what we're looking at here. Okay. This guy has facial hair.
He has facial hair.
Beard,
dark hair.
More also, hair than you.
I don't think this one really hit spot on. But so there's, he sent a second picture, and this is the ironic part. Luke writes, but then I heard you joking, you say you have red hair, which I made some joke along the, I don't have red hair, but he heard that, but he thought I was serious. And so I imagined you look like this priest from the Diocese of Charlotte, North Carolina. So this is a priest with red hair who I think actually looks more like me than the one that the hair color is right on.
I really wish he had just sent a picture of John Tolbert to you.
And
just
like, oh my gosh. What a moment. This does see, this, look like
it. It looks more like me. The hair is a lot closer to reality.
Yeah, we got it's kind of a balding guy, facial hair. He's a little skinnier than this guy, which I think is right. Kind of like a look on the face that you're going to make, you're going to make some poor travel choices and throw caution to the wind
and survive.
Yeah.
But hair, look, he has enough hair. It looks like it could have been long at one point in the past.
It looks like it's going to aggressively gray before 40 years old. And so
that's so true.
That's also,
that's so true.
But it seems like a happy guy. It seems like he's a good holy priest. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned Tolbert. I was talking with him the other day, the one in the New Orleans ordained. We were talking about hair of the future because he was asking me how I do it, because he can already tell.
He's
it's coming for him. Yeah. It's coming for him. He's trying to hide it by letting it go long, but no one's following it for it, John.
He's still buying product and everything. Yeah.
He's still doing that. So the next one up, now this one made me laugh. This is Drew. Luke writes, Father Drew sounds like a meaty guy.
I can see that.
But wait,
are you kidding me? It's
not in a negative way. He says, Father Drew sounds like a meaty guy who played rugby.
Okay. So
I think he means strong meaty. Yeah.
I play football. Yeah.
And I imagined him as the actor Jeffrey Aziz from the movie The Human Experience. In the picture, he's the guy in the dark blue shirt visiting a leper colony in Uganda.
That does sound like
so. If you're listening to this and not driving, Google Jeffrey Aziz.
Which I'm doing right now. Jeffrey Aziz.
Which guy is he in the picture?
The dark blue.
Okay. So I don't actually. It does not look.
I don't think it's a guy. He's again decently skinny. He's got dark hair and it's kind of short-ish.
Pretty big nose.
This doesn't quite. I appreciate the thought process, but we're not quite there. I wouldn't say this guy's meaty.
Yeah, but and he looks like a deep thinker.
We're not quite there. I think when I wrote back to him, I'm like, I don't think Father Drew's that intense. Maybe in high school, Drew was that intense.
No, I don't think so ever.
But his description of you was probably my favorite. That's how I should refer to you at the top of the podcast. The meaty rugby playing Father Drew Hoffman.
I don't know if I've mentioned this, but somebody, I think they were like at a St. Thomas teachers event or something like that. And one of the teachers was like, what's Father Drew like? And someone said, jolly was the word they used to describe. And a bunch of people evidently were like, yeah, that's right. Like, you don't say jolly for a skinny person. No skinny person has ever been jolly.
No.
So
now for Garrett's. You probably have the most complimentary description, I'm going to say.
Okay.
Father Garrett sounds like a smart, athletic, college professor kind of person.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of imagined he looked like this Catholic JD candidate from LinkedIn.
Okay.
So of
this is a professional.
Yeah.
He's got glasses, so he looks smart. I don't have glasses.
You don't have glasses. Minus the glasses, I feel like this is certainly closer than Jeffrey of Z's is for Drew.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah, this is like an adult human who's who's like a
which
like
Garrett is both of those things.
That's what I mean. He's helping him in Uganda and stuff like that. He's a lawyer.
You wouldn't describe him as jolly, I'll say.
No
that.
Jolliness in this dude.
But he's a happy guy.
Yeah, he seems like a good life. He has 243 connections on his LinkedIn page. That's kind of sick.
I'm pretty connected. So.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's a lot at all.
I have no idea.
We love LinkedIn.
I didn't know if LinkedIn is a thing that people use for real.
Oh,
I
think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I get advertisements for it all the time.
Like, we don't need it, but
I just think it's a scam.
I'm not looking for a promotion. No, I think that's used.
Okay. It's a real thing. Well, thanks so much, Luke, for sending those in. That cracked me up. But we were still a little wide, so Luke said he did actually look us up on the diocese, and so he knows what we really look like right now. But we're a little wide, so I thought to give any listeners that don't know us a further help, I thought we should give them a saint that somewhat resembles us. So mine, and it's one of, so this actually happened. I got mistaken for this, you know, a little second grader. They've got a book of saints there, and they've got pictures of the saints on there. And he points to one of them and asks the teacher, why is Father Chad already on this box? Which is awesome that he thinks I can be on the saints book. But the saint he was pointing to was Saint Andrew Kim Taegon, who is a Korean saint. I am not Korean, but that's who this little boy thought that Korean saint. So if you Google an image of Saint Andrew Kim Taegon, there actually is, there's some resemblance.
Yeah, there's a mustache and stuff.
See, and that's what I've discovered.
Ooh, yeah, the stash.
That's the big thing, is as long as I've been shown pictures of St. Ignatius of Loyola, St. John of the Cross, that they're like, this looks like you. If they have a receding hairline,
yeah, that's right.
And they have a mustache that has a split in the middle, I have a natural split in the middle that doesn't connect to the beard. If they have those two things as a saint image, it resembles me. So St. Andrew Kim Taegon, St. John of the Cross, St. Ignatius of Loyola, find the amalgamation of those three saints and you got me.
That's kind of sick that Korea and Vietnam's both Andrew.
I almost named it Andrew Kim Taegon, but I knew we were going to mention
Let's get as many Andrews in here as possible.
On your birthday, I will allow it. And other day.
The most common priest name in the diocese.
Name in the diocese.
Mm-hmm. Most basic.
Oh my gosh.
We're just trying to get a bump from our Asian American.
Yeah, that's right. All our Korean and Vietnamese listeners. And Japan. We've really done a good job with Eastern Asia. All right, Gary, what do you got?
First, I think probably most, if anyone's seen St. Joseph at the Cathedral, like that's a pretty
good one. Oh my God! Get out of here!
Power move to take that one.
No, I'm just kidding.
Man, you are athletic, smart, college professor.
I never thought of this before, and I don't know, just did a few quick searches, and maybe it's just because he's my confirmation saint, but Francis Xavier, I think.
Oh, that's a good one.
Decent.
Yeah.
The beard, at least, is a nice full beard.
Right. Full beard, dark
full
hair,
beard,
short
dark
kind of
hair,
top.
Short on the top,
uh-huh.
Bald in a little bit. I'm getting there, you know. So, I don't know. Because, yeah, I saw several that, like you said, the beard doesn't quite connect all the way, or there's some gaps, but his ones I saw was pretty full.
You mentioned St. Joseph. Did you guys ever hear the joke from Bishop Jekylls? When they were first having that statue made in our cathedral, so if you've never seen that picture, Google St. Joseph, Wichita Cathedral. It's a young Joseph, a very muscular, strong Joseph. It's a great statue, bigger than life size. And Father Bernie Georges used to make the joke that the artist used him for that statue as a model, because the statue is a very strong, protected Joseph over a pregnant Mary. And Bishop Jekylls would always respond, the artist did use Father Bernie, but he misunderstood. He wasn't using him for modeling Joseph. It was for pregnant Mary. Father Bernie's got a little bit of a belly.
That's pretty funny.
What do you have? Because I thought about it for you, this question.
Yeah.
There's very few blonde saints.
That's just
really
what I was going to say.
I've never thought about
that,
but yeah.
That's crazy.
Is there, I don't even, yeah.
I was just going to say that because I Googled saints who were blonde, because there was nothing. I don't think blondes make good saints. I think there's something not strong about blondes.
We may have just discovered something.
I think there's something. Shout out to my fellow blonde people out there, and those who don't listen, I'm very blonde. And Bishop thought that I was. He mentioned something about coloring my hair one time this summer. It's like I do not color my hair; it just gets very blonde in the summer, especially, and things like that. Okay, and with respect to my fellow blonde males out there. It's not a very strong, imposing, like, we're going to hold the line vibe. Like, you don't see a blonde man and you're like, that's the man.
That was a hardcore monk.
Middle
ages or something. Like. No.
And so I assume, my family's German, so I assume maybe some of the German saints throughout history, but I don't know, but I did not find, when you Google saints who are blonde, you get women, like Clara of Assisi and things like that, right? And so I didn't have anything. That's so funny that you said that, because I thought the exact same thing. And that is like, I don't have any facial hair or anything, so that's kind of the defining. I asked somebody this and they said John the 23rd, who's famously the roly-poly pope. And so I don't have a lot of good ones. There is a picture of Pope Benedict that from when he was a kid, maybe just recently ordained, in which he has blonde slicked back hair that people have sent me in the past that says, so you have to find the specific picture, because when he's young, we don't really look like, and I don't know that we look like when he's Pope, but when he was kind of a parish priest, there's some similarities there.
Blonde saints. I mean, maybe the Nordic country, but who are not typically the most Catholic.
I know. There's not a lot of Swedish, Finnish. There are some Norwegian saints. So there probably are some, but I don't know a lot of male Northern Saints.
And blonde doesn't go great in stained glass windows.
That's another thing I think that we get persecuted against. This is forever.
You're just like Andrew Doing Kim Taegon. Yeah. You're being persecuted.
That is really funny. There's a band called Saint Blonde. I'm not promoting them. I've never listened to them, so they may be terrible. But when you Google that, that's something that shows up. And so,
Yeah, I never thought about that. That is fascinating. That's cool.
If you know any blonde saints, or if you've seen any stained glass of blonde saints, please do send it to us.
Yeah, I would actually help. Well, moving on, we've talked about in the past on the podcast about the importance of having someone outside of yourself to help with discernment, someone you can speak to that knows what they're talking about, that can be of assistance to you, to help you discern, to help you to grow. Well, seminaries, when a man enters into seminary, that is built in. Naturally, it's built in by professors. It's built in by friends. It's built in by, you know, different priests around the seminaries. But specifically and institutionally, it's built in that when a man steps into seminary, he will have a spiritual director and he will have a formation advisor. And both of these two different people he will meet with for about every 2 to 3 weeks or so, and they are designed to help him to grow, help him to discern, help challenge him, encourage him. Most people have at least heard of spiritual direction or have some idea about it. Formation advisor is a very niche thing just in seminary, so a lot of people don't really know about that or have not heard about that. So I thought we'd spend part of today's episode just kind of talking about what those two helps are in seminary, what their role is, and kind of our own experience of that. And we were talking about just before we turned on the recording machine, probably a more official name. That just sounded really old. As a fellow old man, Drew.
The recording machine.
the stenograph over here.
The recording. What is this contraption?
Sorry. I'm old.
Little fellow youths.
Yeah. Sorry. We were talking just before I hit the record button. Okay. That's the way to say that. About how in our time in seminary, the role of formation advisor was not always as clearly fruitful as what we experienced from our spiritual director. So maybe we just kind of start talking about what's the difference between those two things as we experience or as we understand it.
Yeah, so the first distinction, I guess, is something I'd never heard of before going into seminary was this internal versus external forum. So spiritual director would be internal in that anything... It's almost like the seal of confessional, like that's not going to be shared with your vocation director and bishop, but formation advising would be in the external forum. So what's being discussed there is going to be shared with vocation director, people making decisions about your future formation and discernment as a seminarian and priest. And so, I don't know, in my experience, especially in college, formation advising was more kind of in the human pillar of formation. And so there was some fruit. I mean, you're just kind of still learning. You know, I was, 21 when I entered. And so you're still just learning some of those communication and conflict resolutions, living with other guys, but not always a great experience. I'll be honest. One time I had a older monk and we met every 2 weeks, which one felt like a lot. Like I didn't have that much going on at conception to have stuff to talk about, but we met like right after lunch one day and I knew he fell asleep during the meeting, but I just like had a book and just like read. And then just like, you know, there's 5 minutes left and our scheduled time kind of made a noise and he woke up. I was like, all right, thanks, Father. Great meeting. Yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks. So it's not always. Yeah,
that is a strong move to pull out the book.
Fruitful. Yeah. And then spirit direction was great. We've talked about that before. Just having a old wise priest, a regular confessor, really to dig into growing in prayer. One, learning how to pray and then seeing where the Lord is leading you day by day.
You know, the formation advisor, my experience was also is supposed to, whether this actually happens or not, kind of keep tabs on you, some accountability. Mm-hmm. Like that's the one who's checking that you're at prayer every day. So each guy, you know, that's the guy who's checking that, hey, you're showing up to things, keeping an eye on you in the lunchroom, or if you need to miss something. My experience is you go to the formation advisor to ask for permission to miss something and things like that. So there was an accountability element. You give goals to them. I don't know actually if you guys still do that. That's one of the things. Mm-hmm. You make your goals for the year and your formation advisor maybe analyzes them, critiques them, and then presents them. And you might have goals in the area of your apostolic ministry, goals in your human habits, goals in your prayer life, things.
School, academics.
Academics as well. And so, yeah, that kind of human... which is necessary, like sanding down kind of some of the rough edges maybe and becoming a person that's all things to all people is some of the formation advising experience. And they're still learning. I think seminaries are still learning what that, it's necessary. It absolutely is a necessity. But we're still learning kind of what, how do you make guys feel like they're not being watched while also you need to be watched in a certain sense? Mm-hmm. Guys having freedom to share things with their formation advisor, but the formation advisors need to maybe discuss some of these things, or maybe some of these are issues that need to get addressed before ordination. And so guys feeling free to talk about certain things. We're learning that still as a seminary mm-hmm. community.
Yeah, so I see it differently nowadays. So I serve here at the house in the role of formation advisor. So about a third of the guys are my formation advisees. And then as vocation director, I travel to the different seminaries. And so I talk with their formation advisors. So practically, like what Garrett was saying, is a guy's relationship to a spiritual director, I know who their spiritual directors are, but I never talk to them. It's never, I never elicit information from him. They never bring it to me because there is kind of, it's not entirely the seal of confession, but it's about as close as you can get in seminary formation. And now occasionally information will travel the other direction. So sometimes like something's going on with a guy and like we need to make sure his spiritual director is aware of it. And so we will send information to a spiritual director so that they are aware of it. We never ask for a response. We don't want them to comment it. And they all understand that this is not for you to, you know, share back to, but just so you know what we are seeing from this side, we'll share that information. Whereas formation advisor, it's a very open dialogue there. I'm looking to see what they have seen, sharing them with what I have seen. I think when I was in seminary and when the role first kind of started, formation advisor, it's exactly what you described as, Drew, in a very limited way, is basically it was an external person to check the boxes. It was someone to say so that the rector didn't have to meet with every single guy and why weren't you at morning prayer or that it was a way to divide up the work to make sure that someone was doing that. And then it started to expand into something more to try and be something more helpful to guys. And we were maybe in seminary in the time where it wasn't clear, you know, if the tide is going in or going out on this. And so it wasn't always well defined. You know, when I went through seminary, I had two great spiritual directors who significantly helped me and were a great guides to me. In my 7 years of seminary, I had five different formation advisors. One was really good, very grateful for him, very helpful. One was all right. And I think the others objectively probably should not have been in formation vice. Yeah. They were there because sometimes seminary, especially back when, would use formation advisor as, oh, this is a job we can give this guy. Because again, it's just checking boxes. So anyone can do it. So you're a professor and here you go. Why don't you be a formation advisor for these guys? Well, he's a very good professor or whatnot, but to work with a man on their human growth, maybe they weren't really able to do that in a positive way. Yeah. And so I know as with my formation advisees, the meetings that I have with them, to me, look and feel far different from the meetings I had as a seminary at that time. It'd be interesting if they could say completely candidly how much value they find in it. You know, they may not find it. I don't know. I do know that with my guys, some of the things that were very different from my time in seminary, one is I pray a lot for them before the meeting. So there is a real spiritual component for me as I enter into it. I never got that feeling from most of my advisors. It was just like, okay, we got 15 minutes or 20 or 30, whatever it is. So there's a lot of prayer that goes into it. I encourage them or allow them, like, this is supposed to be for your benefit. So you lead this meeting. Do you have things you want to talk about? Yeah. If they don't, okay, I usually have some things that we can talk about or explore, things like that, but I give them that opportunity. There is still some checking the boxes, like I look at their grades. Hey, you're not doing well at midterm. What are we going on? We got a paper coming up. So there is some of that, and that's an important thing. It's not a fun thing. It's not a exciting thing, but it's a reality. We all need someone like, yep. The other thing that I feel that I hope is helpful to the guys is that living here in community with them, I can observe things. Again, it's not in a watchful, like waiting for you to slip up, but just kind of an observing sort of like, we all grow up in our families and this is normal in our home, but maybe it's not normal in the community. And we're not always keyed in on that. So helping them to realize like, hey, I know you seem frustrated the other day at the dinner table, or, you know, you keep showing up late for these things. What's going on there? And it's not an accusatory. It's not a gotcha. It's let's explore this together. Let's talk about this. I'm observing this. This is what an outside perspective sees when you do this? How are you experiencing this internally? And so there's hopefully helping expand their human concept of who they are as person. At least that's the goal. That's the hope. Again, one thing I hope for is someday the guys that I work with in formation advising will be ordained priests. And like all of us, once you're ordained a priest, okay, you maybe a little more freedom to speak candidly about things that, and so I look forward to those conversations. Like, I'm not your vocation director anymore. We don't have to have that relationship. So I'm just curious, what was helpful, what wasn't, and they can speak in a freer, I mean, they're always invited currently, but you know, it changes when the role changes. Yeah. So
like we said there though, about a lot of times it just flows from daily interaction. So that was part of possibly why it was left wanting, my experience of it a few times, because sometimes my formation advisor wasn't living on campus. And so it was just a priest coming in, which I think maybe made some sense. They were thinking, we want someone with pastoral experience that's out there, and to connect that to this seminarian's daily experience. But if you're not with me and watching me and just in the classroom, in the hallway, in the lunchroom with me, there's not kind of those opportunities to be like, hey, I noticed this, again, from a third person perspective. Let's dig into that. It just becomes a little bit more police-like or whatever.
And my formation advisors were good priests. They weren't just like guys. They were good. They're good priests. They just were trying to figure out what that looked like. But Gary's exactly right in that the need of living life together is a necessity to do that. That I had that experience with the men on the college campus. That I get to do that with the men on the college campus. Like, hey, listen, love you, man. This is how this is being perceived.
Right.
Something that you are, I know you're not thinking anything about this and it's not anything egregious or I would have said something, but people are taking this a little bit and I'm noticing this. And if I'm noticing it, some other people are, let's just, and I think usually, not always, the response is good because I'm living life. Like, I'm there every single day with them. I'm not just like, hey, I saw this once, kind of a judgy thing. You do kind of need to live life in order to make a comment.
And, it's key that there's a trusting relationship there. And that's, you know, a couple of my formation advisors, frankly, I didn't fully trust. And so it was very hard to get into the deep human, you know, I always trusted my spiritual director, but without that trust, you can't really go where you need to go. And so I think, as you laid out in the beginning, Garrett, the key difference in that internal, external, there's a lot of overlap between the two. The spiritual director is more concentrated through the lens of your relationship with God. And the formation advisor is more concentrated through the lens of their humanity and how they live it. But as I tell my guys, like, I'm a priest, I see everything somewhat through the lens of God or that. So I can't, these aren't going to be neatly parted, but there are differences there. One of the most helpful, when I was being trained in it, and that's another thing, you know, most of my formation advisors, because the church maybe was still figuring out what it was, they probably did not receive any training in that area, I would bet.
Yeah.
I did a 2-year long, 4 weeks out of a year seminar. We'd go down, we'd work with things and we'd talk about it, which was hugely helpful for me. And I don't think many of predecessors had that. But one of the cool ways that stuck with me that one of our people training us described it as is, it's almost like doing ideally Lectio Divina with another person, that of they're talking about their life. And just like with Lectio Divina, you're reading it to receive and you're paying attention to what jumps out or what has strong emotion to it. And so as they're talking about their life or their week or what's going on, you're trying to be guided by the Holy Spirit and listen for where the strong emotion and things are playing out.
Boom. That it was by far my best experience of formation in my 6 years of seminary was Father Ralph.
Yeah, I was going to mention him.
At conception would, this, the way he described it is he would like, and he's a little dramatic about it. He's like, okay, we got a TV on the wall here. And there wasn't really a TV. He said, I want you to set the stage for something that happened in your week and let's press play and let's watch it happen. And you would like describe an event with, usually with the other seminarians or maybe when you were home for break or maybe on your pastoral experience, and you would walk through that with him, explaining what happened. Like when you're reading the scriptures, you have that, like, what is actually, what can I read in the text? And then what are you experiencing? What are you feeling? What do you think other people were feeling? Do you think other people feel when they weren't actually, that you were putting on them? All those exactly like Lectio Divina of the different kind of levels of things that were happening. And that took me much deeper into my experience instead of just on the, I'm not really a journal guy. Mm-hmm. And so that helped me to do what journaling should ideally do. I use that with people all the time in spiritual direction or just when I'm just conversing with students. Students are asking about something that was heavy on their heart or something like that. So I find that very, very helpful. And I think that's a good move forward.
And he always had a a sheet, I remember, on the desk of like all these different emotions, which I, at the time, I thought this is kind of dumb or silly or cheesy, but it challenged me to like, okay, just articulate specifically what was you were feeling, you were going through, whatever, rather than just like, it was bad. I was mad.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's not super. So just grow in emotional maturity to be able to describe it, identify it, name it, claim it, all these things. And so I thought it was really dumb at the beginning, but it was helpful.
Well, Gary and I were at a wine tasting the other night, and that's how our experience was. We're like, this wine is good. Yeah. This
wine is like, use a word to describe the
wine.
We
were supposed, we couldn't do any of that. But with that's how the human heart works often. It's like, I am good.
Right.
I am fine.
I am bad.
Yeah.
I am. Yeah.
And there's much more to it than that.
Well, and that's huge, I think, especially for guys just leaving high school, college age. Spiritual direction. Okay, we're talking about our experience with God, but we can recognize that we feel emotion, but trying to describe it. And so in human formation, you have to sit down and like, I have to put words to what is going on inside of me. And when we do that, it actually reveals something to ourselves. And so that's why, you know, human formation is kind of a mirror on the human side. I think it's important to say neither of them. A lot of guys, when they start spiritual direction, in some ways their hope is he's going to tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to spiritual direction because I don't know what to do. And so he's just going to tell me to do it. A good spiritual director and a good human formation, they don't really do that. They walk with you. They reflect back to you, but they're not there to take control of your life or to tell you what to do. And I think a lot of people enter spiritual director hoping for that. I think we'll wrap it up there for today. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. The final word today goes to Garrett.
This comes from John Paul II. He was kind of responding to a question about the haters, for lack of a better term, or people just attacked him in some way, but this is what he said. They try to understand me from outside, but I can only be understood from inside. Tell me what you love, and I will tell you who you are.
See you next week.